Hello and welcome to a special bonus episode of Checkpoint Chat. Embargoes, they're a thing that lift in the middle of the week when you've already put out an episode for the week. So I'm here with Matthew Figuera, as always. Yep. And we're going to talk about two big games that came out this week. Nice. That we each played. Like,
independently.
I played one, Matty played other. Yeah, independently. That's what
we
I was
played
going
it
for.
Together.
So this is going to be a bit of like show and tell. Matty's going to show me him playing a game and telling me what he thought, and then I'm going to do the same.
Nice. Do we get it's to exciting. Do we get to review each other after? It's like a review review.
This is like a classroom presentation where you go up to the front.
Great footage.
10 out of 10. I want posters. I don't want to see any key cards with keywords in them. I want you to have learnt your review by heart.
Oh, my word. Yeah. Who does that? Mm-hmm. Writes like one keyword.
There was always that one teacher that was
like, whatever. Listen.
There's always that teacher that's like, do not write your whole speech on your key cards. It's like, make me.
Probably the most important speech I made in my life to date is my wedding speech, okay? And I straight up read my speech, okay? I don't care. Mm-hmm. No teacher's going to tell me, oh, you should have memorized that.
I was like, is Linska just off camera there? What? She's just nodding.
She's not even
the
home
most
yet.
Important speech. Yeah, okay.
Oh, because she's not, I can tell you it's not. No, I'm kidding.
If I recall correctly, she also read her speech, so, you know? Listen. Even Steven's there.
Imagine my teacher burst through the door like, I told you. You're not going to remember any of this.
How dare you?
How dare. So yeah, there will be no key cards in these reviews, but should we just get into it?
Yes, let's not waste any time.
I played Assassin's Creed Mirage. So the embargo is today. Apologies for being ever so slightly late. You were too busy playing your review game and writing the review.
Quite literally, yeah.
Quite literally. But for those of you who don't know, Assassin's Creed Mirage is not a traditional franchise reboot in the sense like it's actually kind of not, I guess, but it is a sort of pulling the franchise back to its roots. So if you don't know, the last trilogy of Assassin's Creed's titles, Origins, Odyssey, and Valhalla, starting with Origins, worked somewhat of that was an actual like franchise reboot in a sense. It introduced more role-playing elements, bigger worlds to explore, and with each game it feels like, well, with each sequel the games just started feeling a lot bigger than the one that came before. So like, for example, Origins, to finish it would take anywhere from like 20 to 50 hours. Odyssey was crazy, like we know one of our friends in the world put in 170 hours into the game, and Valhalla was equally big, if not bigger. I mean, I've spoken about how I reached a point in the game, like I enjoyed it, but I started mainlining the game and it still took me 60 hours. So these games are very big now, and Mirage is basically pulling it back to its roots in that the team at Ubisoft wanted to make a more condensed, more focused Assassin's Creed title. This acts as a prequel to Valhalla. You take in the role of Basim, who, I won't go into story details for spoiler purposes. If you've not played Valhalla, you don't know what his role is. And they've essentially made a game that's faithful to the originals, and that even in terms of setting, it looks very familiar to, I think, Assassin's Creed 1. Which is just remind me, do you remember where that was set? That was set in...
It was also in the Middle East.
It is Middle East.
But I can't recall the exact city.
I've also blanked. But this game takes place in Baghdad. And it's interesting because it's a sort of original Assassin's Creed with the modern sensibilities of, you know, the newer games. But I guess that is for better or for worse, because it feels like a lot has been stripped back. Mechanically, like, you know, the game is definitely, it works as a stealth game. Like, that's 100% what they're going for. If I think of Valhalla, that was, stealth was like an afterthought. Like, you could go in weapons, the flailing, and just do whatever the hell you wanted. Like, stealth was just not a thing. Whereas this game, it feels like stealth is exactly what they want you to do. So, sorry, if you can hear the sirens on my side. I don't know what's going on there.
It's okay. You're just going to be arrested.
The police are coming. Man, that's really loud. Sorry about that. So what was I saying? Oh, the stealth is definitely a focus that the team wanted to bring in here. And it's clear because if you get into trouble, while you do have tools to fight enemies off, it's definitely not what you want to do. You know, I think we were talking before recording and even on our own Discord where previous games, it felt like, well, I'm talking like the original Assassin's Creed, the enemies sort of ran at you one at a time to give you room to like breathe and fight back. That doesn't happen here. Like if you get seen, enemies swarm you, and it's got an interesting system kind of, the closest comparison is probably Grand Theft Auto, where you've got like, you know, for lack of a better description, a wanted level. And the more nonsense you get up to, the more wanted you are and the more guards appear, that sort of thing.
So Assassin's Creed 2 had a similar
thing. Oh, was it? Okay, see.
And you,
also for,
you would like rip off posters off the wall to bring down your like level. You would bribe people.
I'm glad you told me that because just for context, Assassin's Creed Valhalla was my first Assassin's Creed. I have no prior knowledge of the franchise.
This is a real shock for you. You've gone from the biggest one ever to one of the smallest, probably.
But, no, I'm glad you told me because Mirage has the exact same thing where you can rip down posters or pay somebody to like wipe your slate clean. So that's, there you go. That's definitely a throwback to, you know, the originals. But sorry, I know this is long-winded, but what I'm getting at is that if you are expecting an Assassin's Creed kind of like Valhalla or whatever came before it, like you might be disappointed because, and it's not a bad thing. Like, don't get me wrong. Someone like you, Alessandro, who I know specifically wants a more focused stealth game, that game is definitely catered to that fan base. Like it's for all intents and purposes, an old Assassin's Creed, like I said, with a modern coat of paint. But if you want the more role-playing elements, experience levels and the ability to like custom build your character, that's completely been stripped away, which might make fans of that specific kind of Assassin's Creed feel that it's, you know, like inverted commas, lazy from the developers. Like, why would they pull it? Why would they strip that sort of thing out? Whereas, you know, the whole purpose of it is to make a tighter, more stealth focused game. And on that front, like they've definitely succeeded. But that's not to say that there's no role playing of any kind. I mean, there are very light elements in that there are three skill trees to follow with their own focuses. So like, for example, you can put points into your combat or into your gadgets or your stealth.
Okay, that's cool.
And those points are given to you not via experience, like previous Assassin's Creeds, those are given to you just via skill points, which you achieve, well, you obtain from doing quests and just doing things in the game. So it's like...
And do you like linearly unlock new, not weapons, but like tools and abilities?
You've got access to a number of tools. You can unlock them in any order you want.
Interesting.
Which is pretty cool. So if you I don't know, want to have smoke bombs before you have like a noise bomb, for example, you can choose that before the other. And there's an element of customization there too, in that each tool has three levels of like it's not modifiers, but three tiers of things you can do to change them. So for example, on tier one on the throwing knife, you can choose a perk that's like, well, you can store more of them, for example. Okay. Another tier will be like, well, you can set it to be armor piercing or something else. So like, it's not to say that there's no customization.
It's not like deep role playing, but there is like some sort of like progression system.
Exactly, But it's just like, for example, if you played Valhalla, you know that you could wield like a dagger in your left hand and an axe or a flail in your right hand. Like you could really do whatever the hell you wanted. Whereas here, you have one weapon. You have your sword.
That's not this game.
No, exactly.
Yeah. It was interesting listening to you and Noel like talk about this with you both lacking a lot of the context about what... Well, okay, I don't know in Noelle's case. I have no idea if she played some of the older ones, but I know for certain you didn't.
I haven't, yeah.
And like when you brought this exact point up with regards to like weapons, you're like, oh, I don't get to choose weapons. I'm like, yeah, that's how it worked. You had a weapon. And the reason for that was because like in the older games, like you mentioned, the combat here is a bit more challenging because enemies come at you at the same time. Previously, they'd come at you one by one and you would have access to this really satisfying, but quite frankly, ridiculous like parry ability where like if you parried someone and killed and executed them, you could then just press a button to like chain that to anyone around you. So like as soon as you killed one person, you were just like performing mass murder on everyone because they were near you and you could just like move into them and stab them and kill them immediately. Amazing. So stealth was then de-emphasized because you could always escape from enemies just by having good timing. Whereas it seems Mirage harkens back to that, but puts way more emphasis on stealth because you can't do that anymore, which that gets me super excited to play Mirage. Yeah.
Well, just to bounce off that. So to be clear, you've only got one weapon, but you do unlock different kinds of swords that have different perks.
Interesting.
So there is incentive to, you know, explore the city and poke around because you do get different kinds of weapon, different kinds of a longsword, I guess, or a whatever the hell the sword's called. And you get different outfits as well, but it's not like a headpiece, a chest piece, pants. It's like, no, you get different outfits as a whole and they'll give you a perk. Like the one I'm equipped with at the moment, for example, it's like, which for those of you who can't see, it's the default, like Assassin's Creed, the white hooded look, whatever it's called.
Yeah.
Of the hidden
looks
ones.
Very much like Altair's.
Yeah.
To be honest.
So that's like a tier one, enemies. Any stealth kills only generate like 50% noise. Enemies won't, they'll might hear it if they're close enough, but it's 50%. Whereas if I level up to tier two and tier three, then I can have it that this outfit specifically makes no noise when I do a stealth kill. So like there are definitely role playing elements, but they've really been stripped back like completely. Even leveling up your weapon to unlock this tier one, tier two, tier three. Like you require resources, but those resources aren't hard to come by. And there's not 10 different ones. It's like you need leather and iron and I think money. And like I've already got one or two tier three weapons and I've put in only a couple. Well, I've put in just for clarity, like I've put in 8 hours into this game. So I've still got a long way to play. I've unlocked, you know, I've maxed out a weapon, if that makes sense. It's not me, you know, like grinding out levels or hunting out resources. It's very easy to just dive into this game and focus on the stealth side of it and the story, which just to talk about quickly, I found the story is very intriguing. It is a typical, you know, it's the Hidden Ones versus, what are they called? The Order?
The Templar Order? Or isn't it before they called the Templars, they were like the Golden Order or something like that?
No. Gold Mask people.
Gold, yeah, those
that's
those
what
people.
That's what they're called in my head now. So I mean the story is it's that age old, you know, it's the Hidden Ones versus them. But what I've really enjoyed about this game has definitely been poking around Baghdad. So the world is smaller, but that's not to say that it doesn't offer lots to do. Like there are still side quests, although there's definitely restraints in them. And the world, because it's smaller, it feels like there's more detail to it. And there's a lot, it feels like more satisfying to explore it, if that makes sense. There's less me just exploring an empty town and then happening upon a thing. Whereas here, it's like around every corner, there'll either be like a treasure in a building or a cool lore entry. Like just unlocking a lore entry and learning about the history of Baghdad and then you know, some of its famous people and their contributions to their society and like the world as a whole, you know, back in the 900s or 800s when this game is set, it's been really interesting to, like, I've loved reading those entries. And I think that's one of the strengths of Assassin's Creed as well. It's like an inopportune moment to learn about history, or for Ubisoft to teach people history about a place they might not know about. So
I think that the setting is really intriguing because I agree with you. Assassin's Creed, I think that's part of its biggest allure, is like having these settings to kind of pick apart and explore. And they do put a lot of effort into representing these settings in, you know, period accurate ways. So
when I unlock a lore entry, typically it'll be like a paragraph saying like, this building, da da da. But yeah, it's usually like 3 or 4 paragraphs, but it's still concise that it's easy enough to read, you know, in a minute or two, and you get such interesting insights into the setting that you're busy exploring. On that front, I've absolutely loved the game. And again, like, I think my concluding thought is that I have enjoyed this game. Like, I'm still digging into it. I'm only 8 hours in. My main progression, if I were to hazard a guess, is maybe like 25%, if that. Mm-hmm. So there's still a substantial amount.
I've heard it's around like a 15 or so hour game. Like, I mean, that's drastically shorter than the past 3 games.
But I think that's if you strictly mainline the game. Like, I could see that.
Okay.
Like, there's plenty to do. And I mean, I've enjoyed just exploring and doing my thing. And 8 hours in, I'm 25%. For my playthrough, I'm expecting 20 to 25, maybe 30 hours. And, you know, just to be clear, like, I've enjoyed the game, but it is going to be very interesting to see what fan perception is in this one. Because, like I said at the top of the review, if you're expecting this super deep, long-winded RPG where you slowly peel away at the layers of, you know, leveling up and getting legendary gear and, like, this is not that at all. However, if you
this is a straight up action game, whereas the others were role playing
exactly
games,
so, but
if
you're looking for, you know, the Assassin's Creed of old, the original few games, like, this is definitely that, a few modernizations here and there on, you know, the light RPG stuff and a few other things. It's a good game.
It does sound like it, from everything you've told me, it does sound like the, like, if Origins never happened, the sort of natural progression of where the series might have gone. So that excites me, because, like, I know I've said before, like, Ghost of Tsushima is pretty much an Assassin's Creed game, just without the name. Like, it's what Assassin's Creed could be in the modern day. And yeah, I kind of hope Mirage is, you know, I know Mirage is there because it started off as a like small thing for Valhalla, and then they spun it off into its own thing while they work on these much grander Assassin's Creed RPGs, because they are definitely going back to that. Yes. Like, they've announced multiples of those, you know. But I do hope that they carve out some space for more of these, because I tend to enjoy these sorts of games. And I'm really looking forward to getting stuck in with Mirage and, like, playing, like, black box missions again and focusing on stealth and doing that.
Yeah. Cool. Well, I mean, I'll definitely be talking about it more as I carry on with the game, but those are my initial thoughts on the first couple hours and beyond. It's a good game. I'm enjoying it.
I'm glad.
Nice. But now you need to tell me about God, you've been so busy.
Yeah, playing. Let's move on to a completely different game. Forza Motorsport without a numeral. just to mess with you. It's been 6 years since the last Forza Motorsport, which is kind of nuts to me.
Because that is crazy.
There was a time where it was just like 1 year was Motorsport, 1 year was Horizon. And I think that happened for like 3 or 4 years, like where they went on and off like that. Forza Motorsport 7 was a weird one to stop on because it was like a good game, but it was a game at a time where loot boxes were such a big thing. And it was infested with that sort of stuff, like loot boxes for rewards and like cards that you could get from loot boxes that could then be modifiers for it was just like a complete mess of that sort of shit. That got in the way of actual racing. Forza Motorsport streamlines everything. Like, there is none of that. This is a honest to God racing game first and something interesting else second. But when you are racing, Forza Motorsport feels incredible. Like I said it on Twitter, but I don't think I've played a better feeling simulation racer or just a racing game in general of this nice. Kind ever. Like, especially if you're playing on controller, I think they've done a lot of work to make that experience really good, because I think simulation racing games are always better on a nice big wheel and pedal setup. And the controller hasn't always been an afterthought, but it's never felt nearly as good. Like, I felt very at home on a controller now, and very much like competitive on a controller, which is really nice.
Yeah.
So the big change for Forza Motorsport, aside from it looking fantastic, like cars look really, really good, the weather effects are really good. But the big change is this sort of light RPG mode that has been intertwined with the career mode. So the career mode is kind of familiar. You have lots of championships, and inside those championships are multiple events, and each event is a collection of a handful of races. So for example, there could be a championship that is the introductory championship, and the first event is, cool, you can only choose cars from these consumer German manufacturers like BMW or VW or stuff like that. Then the second event is okay, now it's only supercars from this subset. And then you race again, you race in events where all the other races are pulling from that same subset. None of this is particularly new to Forza Motorsport. It's just that's what it is. The difference is that when you go to an event and you need to typically pick a new car to enter that event with, you're exposed to this RPG progression system that is tied to every single car that you purchase. So every time you use a car in any event, this extends to multiplayer, free play, time trials, and then the career mode. Anytime you use a car, you accrue XP towards that car. And the XP is rewarded for taking corners well, or acing a sector, or overtakes, or clean races, or just racing.
Everything.
Just perfecting your racecraft is rewarded with XP. And as you level up your car, you unlock categories of parts that you can then upgrade. So the path for every car is kind of this, it is the same. Every car at level, say, 5 will unlock the ability to edit their gear ratios. I don't know. I can't actually remember what was at level 5, but that's as an example. Every car is like that. But when you get to that stage, you can then use a currency called car points, which is also accrued by just using your car, and use that to basically install these upgrades to your car and increase handling and speed and braking and whatever. And between every single race, because you are consistently leveling up your car at a rapid pace and earning these points, you're constantly tinkering with your setup and finding the right balance for the events that you're in, and more pertinently, your driving style. Do you enjoy a bigger emphasis on handling and braking than top speed, because you like going into corners really hard and turning hard, stuff like that. And I found that it helped me develop a really good relationship with each and every car that I was using, because every car that I bought for every new event was stock, and you could immediately feel coming from a fully upgraded car, irrespective of what category of car it was, a big difference, between that and a new stock car that you can now see as a blank slate. And then two or three races later, you can, tangibly feel the effects of the upgrades you've installed. And it just feels like a cool way to progress through the story with each and every car that you buy. So I really like that system. I think Turn 10 understood that some people would not be keen on this. And so they allow you to kind of automate this process. So you can't turn off the RPG-ness, but you can say, cool, between every race, I'm just going to hit X, and it's going to configure the best, it's going to auto-spec for me based on the points that I have. And then show me what stats changed, and I hit okay, and it goes. And most of the time I use that system, it spats out a really good like configuration that I ended up using. So I think that's a totally viable way to play. Mm. It's also cool that the points that you accrue aren't like, you're not spending a currency that is gone. It is like a pool of points that you can just,
okay,
you can sort of just respec at any point, and then it just refunds you all those points, and then you can choose to take your car in a different direction, if that makes sense. So
yeah.
Also, none of this like takes away from the very simulation heavy tuning that you can do to your car, where you can like adjust brake biases and gear ratios and percentages of this and percentages of that, like the stuff that really big enthusiasts get excited about, because it it allows them to make small tweaks that will make a big impact on the track for them when they are racing at that level. That stuff's all there. That stuff is not locked off by any car levels or whatever. You have access to that from the get-go, so that's like,
that would be,
don't
hilarious.
Worry about that.
It's your level 50.
That'd be a bad time. I've seen, you know, anecdotally, I've read now that a lot of the reviews are out, that a lot of people didn't, or a lot of critics didn't like the RPG system in the way that I did. I saw some complaints that it takes really long to level up cars. I did not find that at all. I was hitting, like, I can for sure say from race one stock to after that first race, I was up by like 10, 15 plus levels.
Sure.
Like it's absurd how quickly you unlock cars. And it has to be, because there are over 500 cars in this game.
Yeah.
Like if turn 10 is going to encourage you to play with a huge swath of cars, that cannot make it feel like you're grinding for hours on every car. Like, so
what is the max level of a car out of interest?
50.
If I'm mistaken. Okay. 500 50, times 50. Yeah. Let's go. Please don't let there be an achievement tied to that.
I saw one review that basically said like, oh, it takes like multiple hours to max out a car. And I'm just like, I don't know if I'm like doing far more practice sessions or just like focusing on an upgrade. Like that's not what I experienced at all. Not even close. So yeah, take that with, that's my experience. Anyway,
nice.
The career mode's cool. I really, really like it. The multiplayer modes are pretty awesome as well. The core multiplayer is called Featured Multiplayer, which is kind of a weird name, but they're kind of trying to replicate the idea of a race weekend where they have these events that are happening in real time. And you have to enter an event before the race essentially starts globally. And then when you enter a race, you have access to like a practice session where you can do, you know, practice laps and flying laps, a qualifying session, which then determines your starting place on the grid, and then the actual feature race. And I think it's cool that they've done this because it makes each one feel like an event. It's not just like a playlist or a find me a match that you've hit on. It's like a thing you actively have to think about joining, and everyone around the world has joined at that exact same time. You know, it's
nice.
It's kind of cool. I like Rivals a lot. This is a returning mode from Forza Motorsports. Well, it's been in a few of them actually, but essentially you get chucked on a track with a car. Most of the time the events are split up into classes of cars. So like E class, D class, C class and up. And you are just trying to set the fastest one lap time against other people around the world. So as soon as you set a lap time, it will match you with someone who is just slightly faster then you'll be racing their ghost. Yeah. Yeah, cool. And then if you beat them, it immediately kicks you into a new lap with like a new ghost. So you can just spend, the other day I spent like an hour just doing this. I was just going around the track because every lap I was just getting better because like I was understanding the track. I was like pushing limits in certain places and it was just super, super fun.
Nice.
There's limited time events in Rivals now as well, where instead of choosing a bunch of cars from a class, you're given a car and everyone is given the exact same car to do times. I like that a lot more because I know I'm on a level playing field with everyone. Whereas when it's class based, you know, it's like, should I choose this car? Should I choose that car? Also, like, what upgrades does a guy have on his car? Because you bring those into multiplayer.
Why is my C-class car just not holding up against this S-tier car? I mean,
I know, it's so weird. Just absolutely crazy. So yeah, I think there's a lot of content on offer. The one place that I'm a bit bummed about is at least the number of tracks at launch. So there's 14 tracks, but technically there's 20 circuits because some tracks have alternate layouts. Like if you've got slow ass cars and you're in a long ass track, they don't want you driving for 8 minutes.
4 hours later.
Yeah, exactly. I just think it like immediately feels like too little. Especially in the career mode, it didn't take long for me to be like, oh wow, I'm racing here again, like okay. And then I went into free play and cycled through all of them and I was like, oh, there's just very few tracks, like, and there's like weird emissions. So the Nürburgring is not there, which is like a pretty classic track.
That's typically a staple in a lot of racing games.
Yes, Marina Circuit, the Formula One circuit in Abu Dhabi is not there. There's actually not a single Formula One, well, currently used Formula One circuit from Italy in the game. They have a track in Italy in Mugello, but they do not have Imola or Monza, which I find very, very strange. But they are cool tracks, like Silverstone in the UK is there. Really nice. Great track. My personal favorite, Suzuka in Japan. Fantastic track. There are a lot of American tracks that I've never heard of or raced on. And then some fictitious tracks that have been staples in the Forza Motorsport.
Wakanda.
Definitely racing through Wakanda.
Make that track.
There's one called Maple Valley, which was actually in the very first Forza Motorsport. That's still here. It's the first track you race on. It's gorgeous. I think it's cool. And we get Kyle Lamy for the very first time.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, representation of South Africa. Was really cool racing around there, given that it's, of the tracks in the game, the only track I've actually been in a car around. So that was really, really fun. Yeah, exactly. Oh, geez. Amazing. Oh, well, I remember going around that track with an actual, honest-to-God, professional driver and crapping myself.
And just shitting your pants.
Man, people fucking attack those corners. Oh, my. People don't drive normal. Yeah, I mean, Forza Motorsport is the reason it doesn't have a numeral at the end of the name is because it's being set up as this live platform that Turn 10 will just add content over time. I think a lot of games are going this way, like Call of Duty is doing it, Assassin's Creed is doing it. They just want one launcher.
I'm speaking shit.
Halo Infinite was meant to do this, but it seems like that's not happening anymore. But you get what I mean. This could be what was it? Flight Simulator? Flight Simulator, yeah. Flight Simulator is a good example of Microsoft's approach to this sort of thing. Like, they are just bringing out a ton of new content to Flight Simulator soon. And I'm pretty sure that's the model Forza Motorsport is going to follow. I know that a couple of tracks are coming this year already, like the Yas Marina Circuit. The one I mentioned not being there is like out next month.
Okay.
And I think the Nürburgring is coming next year, they announced, or something like that. So I'm pretty sure they're going to be updating this over time, which is cool.
Yeah.
But it's good. It's good that what's here at launch is still really solid. I had a stupidly good time with this game. More fun than I expected to have, to be entirely honest, because like, I like simulation racing games. I much prefer arcadey ones. I love the Forza Horizon series, for example, because of that. But I've always had a soft spot in my heart for Forza Motorsport.
Yeah.
And I'm just super glad that this series, after 6 years, is back in a way that I think is really, really strong. And I can't wait. I can't wait to see where they go with this in the future.
Yeah. Well, it makes sense as a, like you mentioned, it's a game they're going to keep supporting. And it almost I don't think this is at all what the intention was, but it makes sense to then, only release 16 tracks, because then you can stagger out the release
You can't have like 40 tracks like Forza Motorsport, or 33 tracks like Forza Motorsport 7 at launch, and then be like, okay, well, what's next? There's only so many tracks in the world.
Now play the game for 5 years.
I get that. I guess it was just kind of a weird one to see laid out bare. I was like, oh, expected there to be a bit more. But
yeah,
I mean, if it means that over time I will keep coming back because they keep adding tracks, that's good.
Yeah. Cool. That's Forza. Not Forza.
Forza Motorsport.
Motorsport.
And Assassin's Creed. That is Forza Motorsport and Assassin's Creed Mirage. I guess we'll do more of this throughout October if embargoes keep messing around with us.
Also, we'll probably talk, I'm sure we'll touch on these in our regular episodes anyway.
Absolutely. We'll chat about it in the regular episodes, which post every Monday on your favorite podcast service and on YouTube.
Nice.
But yeah, October's stacked. We've got Mario, we've got Alan Wake, we've got Spider-Man. And that's all coming within the span of like
a couple 20 weeks. Days. Yeah. So, crazy. Yeah.
Lots happening. But thank you so much for joining us on this little bonus review episode. We'll be back again, usual time, Monday at 7 in the morning. I don't know, depending where you
sometime.
Live. And if you want to send us questions or comments, you can find us on social media or email us checkpointchatpodcast@gmail.com, as always. But thank you, Matthew, for joining me here today.
Pleasure.
I'm going to go have dinner. It's going to be great.
Nice. Cool.
Thank you so much for listening, everyone, and we'll be back soon.
Cool.
Okay. Goodbye. Bye.